Indulgence on Magic 105.4 with Josh Groban.
Josh Groban, good evening and welcome to Magic 105.4.
Thank you so much.
How
great to be here.
How has your time been in London so far?
I love it here. This is a home away from home for me. I've made much of the album here and it's great to be back here.
Fantastic. Well, we're going to be talking about your album, Awake, which is your third album.
It is, yes.
Great. And we're also going to be talking about some of your music choices. Shall we start with your first choice, which was Corinne Bailey Rae?
Yes. I just love her. She's new and she's just got such a great voice and such a great spirit. And I just think that we're going to see a lot of great things from her in the future. And this is a really very catchy, very cool first single from her.
Was that a big single in America? I know that she
tapped
into the American market, but has it had the impact?
I think so. Yeah, I think it's, I mean, I hear it all the time. And she's certainly done a lot of great TV over there, Saturday Night Live, and a lot of TV shows, and she's got the Grammy nomination now. So, you know, I really hope that, you know, she's part of a group of young artists that I feel are different and breaking the mold and doing really well on their own, and people are discovering it. So I absolutely feel like she's really doing well over there.
We're talking about TV. Corinne Bailey Rae, you say that she's doing TV. You yourself have appeared on our screen.
I've dabbled a little bit, yes.
It was Ally McBeal, mm-hmm. I think that was. Now, I'm going by memory. If I'm getting my memory right, it's yes. The episode that I loved was when nobody would go with you to the...
to the prom.
That's right.
Poor me. Who wants to join my pity party? That's that was pretty much what it was, yeah.
And Ally goes.
And Ally says, well, you know, I'll take you to the prom, you know, and she was kind of my chaperone to the prom. And then I wound up singing the song to the girl that I originally wanted to go with me that I was in love with. And it was the song You're Still You from my first album. And, you know, it was just such a great experience for me because I was just fresh out of high school. I had done some theater training, so I had a little bit of the acting thing under my belt. So to get more of that training, more of that experience was great. And then to be able to sing one of my songs on the season finale, to me, I just wanted to do a good job and I didn't want to screw up, but...
I don't think you did.
Well, thanks. Yeah, no, it's something that I still talk about to this day. I'll probably always talk about it. And it just kind of became this kind of phenomenon. It was my first taste of people kind of wanting to know more about me and that kind of thing. So it's great. I still keep in touch with the cast and they were so kind to me.
When you say it was like the first of people wanting to know more about you, now, if I have my facts correct, haven't your album sold in excess of 13 million?
Well, they have, yes.
That's a lot of interest.
They have now, yeah. But when that episode aired, my first CD wasn't even half done. So I was months and months away from even having my party of Here I Am, you know. So it was one of the, you know, the next day radio stations were calling my house saying people want to know more about you. Who is this kid? People wanted to know who was the voice behind that actor, and then they wound up realizing it was all you. And it was just kind of I was living at home, and it was just kind of one of those things where I was like, you know, Mom, Dad, this is just a job. What happened here? You know, and it became a real big deal. And but people forget. People see it and they forget. And the album came out a few months later, and we still needed.
But did that not awake memories? Awake? Did
yes.
that did that not like re-jog memories? For the Ally McBeal appearance,
it did absolutely because they brought me on a second time,
yeah.
And you know, David E. Kelly was kind enough to have me back on, and it was a great, you know, venue for me because it was a funny kind of goofy character, you know, guy next door kind of character that I got to play.
We'd say that's a bit geeky.
Geeky, don't mind. You can see the glasses I'm wearing
no.
You know, we're all there.
He was a bit timid. He was a bit,
yes,
but once you opened your mouth
yes,
and started singing.
Absolutely. And that was kind of true to life as to me and my discovering of my voice and of what I wanted to do artistically, because I was shy. I was probably a geek in junior high school and high school. And when I started singing, when I started getting interested in music, I thought, you know, this is what I have. This is what I have to use as my truest form of communication and to reach people. And so I started making friends. I started going to an art school. And so I'm really glad that this episode really kind of accentuated that, because I think a lot of people feel that way. Maybe not to the extreme of my character in Ally McBeal, who trips and falls every time he tries
yeah.
to stand up. But I think we all feel there's a little bit of Malcolm in everybody. And I think that it was nice to end the episode with that, you know, with singing the big song and, you know, making the girl cry.
Oh, wonderful. Now, Awake is your third album. Mm-hmm. And my assumption is, if my facts are right, my assumption is that you've taken a slightly not a different turn on this, but I think you've maybe developed, you've broadened
it's
yourself.
It's more of an evolution, I think, yeah.
Broadened yourself a bit more. And you've worked on this album with Ladysmith Black Mambazo.
Yes. Oh.
Now, yeah. Some months ago I interviewed Paul Simon.
You did, oh well.
Graceland is, that's...
It's just it, you know.
That's the album. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When I hear the beginning of Diamonds on the Soles of Her Shoes, it just...
Oh, yeah.
Isn't it just fantastic?
It's incredible, yeah.
So how did you get together? How did you get to work with these guys?
Well, I mean, I idolized Paul and Ladysmith and all the musicians on that great album since I was a kid. I first listened to that album when I was 9 or 10 years old, and it just kind of stuck with me. And it was the first time that I'd really heard on a CD or in music in general the idea of the cross-pollination of music and just taking sounds from different areas and introducing them to cultures that had never heard them. And so Paul definitely did that, I think, for much of the world with that album for the African music scene. And so, you know, I became fascinated with all aspects of of African music ever since that album. And so, not to mention Ladysmith, I'd followed them their whole career. And so when I was making this album, I was very inspired by my trip to South Africa, having met Nelson Mandela and having visited
one of the working with schools in Soweto.
Yeah, I visited one of the food schemes in Soweto, and I was so moved by the children that I met there. I didn't know what to expect. I was actually scared to visit just because I knew the impact that it would have on me. But I walked away with it leaving such a feeling of anger, but at the same time feeling such a positive hope for these kids, because it is, you know, it's in our hands to help them, but they have to run with it once they have it, and their attitude and their spirit and the light that they showed. We all walked away just totally amazed by these young kids, and so I wrote a song called Lullaby with a guy named Dave Matthews, an incredible singer songwriter, and it was inspired by those children. And to be able to sing it with Ladysmith Black Mambazo, we played them the song and they were excited. And they were touring in New York, so we were able to just fly to New York and work with them. And you know, so many of the experiences on this album were really magical for me, and I think that that working with Ladysmith and being in the studio with them, having loved them my whole life, was certainly one of those moments. And you know, so it was totally unexpected, and I was totally thrilled.
Tell me about that recording session, because when their voices come together,
we set up the mics.
It's like weaving cloth, isn't it?
It is, and you could get any number of group of singers together. Those guys have a sound, and Joseph, his lead vocal that weaves in and out of that group, is unlike any singer I've ever heard on this planet. He's just absolutely got a world of his own. And you know, we set up the mics, and Glenn Ballard and I were producing the song, and so we kind of sat back and we're just kind of like, all right, well, they've got the parts, you know, we've played the harmonies, let's see what happens. And then they open their mouths, and it's, you don't have to do anything except press the big red button and just let it happen, because they just know where to go. And Joseph writes all the parts and does, you know, they come up with new things that you never expected, and they bring it to places that you never expected. And I think that's, to a certain extent, a lot of what they did with Paul too, is that Paul would come with these melodies and say, here, you know, here's a song, it's called Diamonds on the Soles of Your Shoes, whatever. And they would, and Joseph would write all these, you know, vocal parts around the song. And it's those collaborations that are so inspiring. And so, so I was just so happy that I was able to have kind of my moment with them and live that, because, they really are special. I'm proud to call them my friends now.
Proud to have them on the album.
Absolutely.
As well. Okay. Well, I think that's a perfect place to play your Paul Simon choice.
Yes.
And even though Ladysmith aren't on it.
No, but this is probably one of Paul's biggest hit singles. You know, this is the song that kind of put him on the radio map, and it's a fun song, you know, it's cool. It's You Can Call Me Al.
Josh Groban is my guest on Indulgence this evening. I'm Angie Greaves, and you're listening to London's Magic 105.4. We're talking about Josh's we're talking about his third album, which is called Awake. Current single, February Song.
Mm-hmm.
Give me the inspiration behind that. Where did that?
This was a song that it was late at night. I was watching TV, and it was right at the beginning of the making of this album. And I felt like I was at a really, you know, when people kind of start going through their own personal crossroads, you know, it becomes a very personal thing, because it really is just stuff that you're going through on your own, and it really does feel like no one else can help you out, you know. And so I was at that point where I had a lot of questions I needed to answer, and I was going through some things personally, professionally. I didn't know what the next step would be, and I felt like, okay, you know what, I just had the urge to sit down at the piano and write a melody that to me represented those questions and represented that loneliness and the feeling of being apologetic to those people around you, that you just have to go it alone and you have to figure out what it is for yourself. And so it happened very fast. I just sat down and it just kind of came out. And
this is the song that came to you in about half an hour.
Yeah, 30 minutes later it was done, and it was really, for me, the most emotional writing that I'd done. I finished it and I was almost on the verge of tears. I just felt like it was just like, wow, what was that? What just happened? You know, it doesn't happen like that a lot. Writing songs can be grueling and it can be homework, and you spend days and days just figuring out which note should go after the next. And this was not one of those situations, so I was thankful for that. And then I worked with a great writer named John Andrasik from a group called Five for Fighting. I've loved his work for a really long time. He's got a very kind of Bernie Taupin way of writing lyrics. They're direct, they're to the point, but they're also very poetic, and they aren't down your throat. They let the listener kind of figure out for themselves what it means. And so we worked together on this lyric, and you know, it was about, you know, really kind of about that that loneliness and about figuring things out. So I like it. It's you know, it represents the crazies, the crazies in the head.
Another name that you've worked with on this album, and geographically looking at this, you've gone from like many corners of the earth.
Yeah.
You have. Yeah.
Yeah.
Herbie Hancock. Now.
Well, yeah.
Now, I mean, now, looking, judging by your age, mm-hmm. and the fact that you were listening to Ladysmith, Black Mambazo and Graceland when you were about nine,
yeah.
I don't want to tell you how old I was when I started listening to Herbie Hancock, but were you, are you into his music?
Oh, absolutely. And my dad was a jazz fanatic.
Okay.
And so I got into that very, very
early. You got
early.
That influence from
absolutely.
Your father.
And you know, you want to talk about what Paul did, you know, to bring new styles and to expand what people thought of as pop music and folk music.
Yeah.
Herbie did the same thing with jazz music. He did the same thing. You know, Herbie became a genre all his own, you know, and you know, when you hear his playing, not only his technical skill, I mean, the guy has got one of the quickest musical minds I've ever encountered. He just knows where to go. It's like the piano's a road, and you just give him, you give him music, he'll hear it for the first time, and he just knows how to navigate. And by the end of it, you just don't know how that happened, you know. But so I'd met him backstage at an event we were both doing together for Stevie Wonder, and I had complimented him on the duets album he had come out with called Possibilities. I was wearing it out. I loved it. And he goes, "Oh man, we should do something together. We should do a duet sometime."
When an artist says something like that to you, do you automatically think, "Yeah, yeah," or do you really think, "Do you know what? I'm going to make this happen"?
You know, there might be a split second where you say, "Oh, it's schmoozy, it's backstage," but then immediately you go, "No, he said it. Make sure it happens."
Make sure, you know? There you go. You
know? So you have to, you know, it's like when somebody like Herbie Hancock opens the door a little bit for you.
You go in there.
You have to walk in it. So I decided not to wait for the phone to ring, and I had written the song called Machine with my friend Eric Mouquet in France, and we didn't know that it would develop into a kind of a jazzy piece. It was going to be kind of a world beat, kind of like what we had done before, and as we started adding the live instruments and the horns, it started getting just kind of downright funky, and we didn't know, you know, it kind of took us by surprise, and it was not like anything I'd ever done before, but it just still felt so right. And we were thinking, oh man, wouldn't it be great to have Herbie Hancock play on this? I said, well, I talked to him, you know, and he said he wanted to do something. So I sent him the song. And again, he came in and, in, you know, true legend fashion, drives up in his Ferrari, comes in,
oh.
"Josh, man, love the song. Let's do this. Let's knock this one out." And we had his Rhodes set up, and he had a special piano brought in. And again, you just push the red button and just let it go. And you know, he added so much to that song, I think, because it needed an edge, and it needed a kind of a, you know, we kept telling him, play dirtier, you know, because it needed that punch.
It needed some dirt.
Exactly. And he's got this great grit when he plays the Rhodes, and the way that he can play, it's fantastic. So, and then combined with just the great lyrical, beautiful playing that that does in the middle of the song, he goes from the piano to the Rhodes, and it just, for me, just shows so much of what he's brilliant at. And so, you know, I'll always be proud of that one, just because it was great.
Wonderful. You're throwing some names at me here, Josh. You mentioned Stevie Wonder and writing abilities of Bernie Taupin.
Stop the dropping.
No, do continue. This is wonderful. In mentioning Bernie, it brings me to ask you about the next choice.
Yes. Oh, God. I have to name drop.
Now, this was Elton John's initial first single, wasn't it?
Was it?
I believe it was.
It wasn't Rocket Man?
No, I think Rocket Man came after.
Came after this, wow.
But I could be wrong.
Okay.
I could be wrong. However,
there were just so many strings. There was a string of them, just one after another. This song is just one of the most. I mean, he's got so many beautiful songs, and it's hard to say that one's more beautiful than the other. This is one of my favorites of Elton's. And,
well, I did say to you, you chose your song because, I mean, which one do you choose?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's just so many to choose from, but this one never ceases to give me chills. This one never ceases to just make me just melt. It's just one of those songs that just is so beautiful. And I had the great great honor of doing this one as a duet with him at, at another charity event that we did together, and he was kind enough to do that. So,
okay, come on, before we hear it, where, when, tell me about it. Tell me about the event.
We were in New York. Elton and I met backstage at the Royal Variety Show, actually, a couple years ago, and he asked me about this great, great Evelyn Lauder Foundation for Breast Cancer, the Pink Ribbon. And they just raise so much money every year in New York City. And Elton was kind of the MC of that night. And I did about 30, 40 minutes of music. And then kind of surprised me. He walked on stage and said, let's do your song. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it was my whole band and I were just kind of one of those pinch me moments. So we had a great time.
You definitely didn't say, where's the bathroom?
Yeah. No.
Shall we do this now?
I held it. Yes.
Let's hear your song from Elton John. Thank you, Josh. I'm enjoying this indulgence. I really
am. Yes, me too.
This is wonderful.
I've got grapes. I've got fruit.
Now, do eat. Feel free. Don't worry. Now, you met Nelson Mandela, worked in schools in Soweto, you were saying. Tell me about the actual meeting with Nelson. Was this another by chance thing or was this an appointed?
You know, my band and I were so thrilled to be in South Africa to begin with. I'd been fascinated with the country, with the history, with the music. And the fans there had been so wonderful. So we knew we were going there to perform concerts. And while we were there, the opportunity came about to meet him and to become, he asked me to be an ambassador for his AIDS Foundation. And so, so we went to Johannesburg and we went to his office and, you know, he has such a, I mean, when you sit down with the guy, you don't say much, you just listen and you just try and take in as much as you can. And, I was so unbelievably moved that I was given the opportunity to help his cause and to kind of be a soldier for him and to spread the word about his 4664 campaign and the food schemes he's creating for Unite Against Hunger. And so, you know, being able to meet with him and hear his ideas about the problems with poverty and with hunger, not only in that country, but all over Africa and all over the world. And getting rid of the stigma of AIDS and helping, you know, helping raise funds for medication and you know, there's so much to be done and he's got, you know, he's really got the plan, you know, and we all just have to help him any way we can. And so the whole meeting was one that was so inspiring for us. And I walked away. I called my mom afterwards and I got back to my room and I just said, you know, this was a moment for me. This is a moment where I really feel like this is something I'd like to spend the rest of my life helping and doing. So I definitely, you know, got, you know, was hooked on it. You know, when I got back, I figured, you know, the fans have raised so much money for my foundation. I want a lot of that money to be filtered through his foundation. So that's what's happened.
I think it's a perfect choice here to play Is and Over the Rainbow.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now this is big in London, and
oh, good. I'm glad to hear that.
I get calls to play this record. My program is Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 8 till midnight. Every Friday, Saturday, Sunday, somebody calls and says, "Angie, could you play that song? Can you play that song?"
Sure.
I can't quite get to grips with how a man with a little guitar, or what is it? Is it a banjo?
It's
is it a ukulele?
Ukulele.
It is a ukulele.
Yeah.
I can't quite get to grips that there are no synthesizers.
No.
It's just simple.
Yeah.
But effective.
Absolutely. It's not only, I mean, he has had such an amazing, sweet voice and at the same time, he had such an amazing ability to tell a story and to tap into the pathos of a song and reaching people with, you know, it really was. It was just him in a ukulele singing this beautiful song that so many people had heard before, but no one had ever heard it this way. And that's the mark of just a great artist. And so I love this song.
Well, Josh, you are going to be touring here in the UK, aren't you? Now, can you let me know when and the venue?
Can I? I don't think so.
I dare go by that paper.
No, don't go by the press release.
Okay, so you're going to be touring soon.
Yeah, I'll be touring very soon. I'll be here in April or May. I'll be here in May. And the venue, full band, full orchestra, full choir, full everything.
Let me ask you, has your band remained the same on for your three albums?
No, I work with a number of different musicians on the albums. As we tour, you know, we work with different musicians too.
So the band you had in Africa was different to say the band when you
generally the guys that I've had that I've toured with have for the most part stayed the same. Mm-hmm. When I make the album, you know, I'm traveling around and each producer has a number of different musicians they like to work with. And for instance, when we were working on the African songs with Glenn Ballard, we used many of the musicians from the Graceland album. We had Bikiti Kumalo on bass and Vincent Ngini on guitar. And it was just, you know, that was really a lot of fun. And so, Depending on the song, there's different musicians out there that have different styles, and so, you know, the challenge for my band when we tour is for them to adapt to all those styles on the road.
Hmm. I'm not sure now. We've got Frozen by Madonna, and we've also got Why by Annie Lennox.
Yes.
Now let's just go for both. Tell me, okay. what is it about Frozen? Because once again, another artist where you could have picked any song because her catalog is so massive.
I think Madonna's great. I think that she's always innovative, and I think she always picks producers that help her realize her vision, whatever step in her long career that she's in. And this particular song was produced by a producer that I had the great privilege of working with on this album, named Marius de Vries. And I picked this song not only because I think Madonna's great, but also because as a fan of Marius's work as well, it really expressed his ability as a programmer, as a producer. And when I listen to the song, I can really hear that great artist-producer relationship and how those two minds can meld. And so it really turned out to be a beautiful song.
Hmm. And I found with Madonna, although I've known it, because when you work in the business, you do know video contributes so much to sales of
a
song.
Yeah, sure.
But wasn't that video, the weirdest but the most effective?
It was.
Do you know?
That's Madonna's thing. It's weird but effective.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, you remember it. That's for sure. Yeah. No, but it's a great piece.
Okay.
And do we want to talk about Why as well?
Please,
okay,
tell me.
Annie Lennox I've just idolized since I was younger. You want to talk about somebody who was not afraid to use a big voice, you know, to come out and just, as my voice is cracking, a big voice. you know, to just go out and just, you know, when she sings, it's like it's just coming from the earth up out of her. I mean, it's just, she's just got such a powerful instrument. And I think that this song was one of the main ones on the radio that people listened to and fully understood the depth of her instrument and how effectively she was able to use that to get a message across. And so I love Annie. She's great. I had the great privilege of meeting her not too long ago, and she's just as nice as she is talented. And I love the song.
You're referring to her voice as her instrument.
Yeah.
And I mean, years ago, when I was in the church and used to sing in a choir, we were told, don't just go on stage and start singing. You need to look after your instrument. You need to warm up.
Absolutely.
Do you do the same? Do you look after your voice?
You know, it's not like a guitar or another instrument. You can pack it up and, you know, go party. It's frustrating. It's always a love-hate relationship with the voice because it's in you and it's part of you. And it is the only connection between your brain and what you want to express. And so you have to be careful. You have to get lots of rest. I drink lots of water. I don't smoke, you know, drink occasionally, but not if I have to sing, you know, and most importantly, you know, I just take care of it through warm-ups, through proper technique. I mean, you know, I taught myself how to play piano. I taught myself how to play drums. Voice is something I've taken lessons forever and ever and ever because it's about stamina and it's about just, making sure that I just keep after it. And you have to kind of control the beast, you know? So
Do you hear a difference in your voice on this album, having used different producers, having moved away geographically, using African beats, more jazz, funky beats? Have you heard a difference in your voice?
I think that I wanted the voice to pretty much remain the same. I think I wanted to make the influences and the surroundings a little bit different, but I wanted the voice to just expand. I wanted it to grow in range. I wanted it to grow in clarity. I think if anything, a couple of these songs, I took it down a notch vocally,
okay,
just in terms of softness and just not being all about, you know, I can hit this note. You know, I wanted it to be more about, you know, getting the emotion across and all that. And so, other than that, you know, I think that in a couple of these songs, you know, vocally, I did some things I'd never done before, like,
okay,
the Ladysmith track. You know, I'd never sung just a cappella with a vocal group before, so that was something that was new to me. A song like Machine, you're not thinking about vocal technique. You're just opening up and just letting it roar. So, you know, there was a couple things on this album that I'd never done before that I'd like to do more of in the future. Mm.
And after all the name dropping that we have done,
yeah,
anybody that you really, really do want to work with? Duet with?
Oh, there's so many people. You know, there's so many great artists out there. I've always thought it'd be interesting to work with Bjork. I think she's exciting. She's brilliant.
She's different.
She's very different.
Yeah.
I love what she's done with orchestra. I love what she's done with classical music and incorporating it into her electronic thing. And I don't know, be fun. I think everybody and their mother wants to work with Bjork, so, you know, I got to stand in a long line. But
well, you never know. She might just come and say, hey, come and do this with me, like Herbie Hancock did.
I'll let you know if that happens next time, yeah.
Josh, it's been great talking to you.
You too. Thank you so much for having me.
All the best with the album.
Thank you so much.
The current single is February Song, and you're going to be touring very soon in the UK. And I'll be there front seat.
I'll be honoured to have you as my guest.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Don't miss all the other great unedited star interviews available for free download at magic.co.uk/podcasts.